علي عليه السلام.
علی امام منست منم غلام علی، علی امام منست منم غلام علی، مدار جان گرامی فدای نام علی،
and now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen, and that is the universal aspect of his personality. George Ardaq has very appropriately given the title to his book, where he says, Al-Imam Ali, Sawt al-Adalat al-Insaniya, that Ali is the voice of human justice. Because when you look at the sense of justice of Amir al-Mu'mineen, it is even that sense of justice. Then his mind and his heart is universal, applies to everything, even animals. One example again in that same context of the government and how he used to deal with the people, a person by the name of Ash'as bin Qais, a munafiq. The reason I'm saying munafiq because he was, you know, a hypocrite, didn't like Ali. His daughter is the one who poisoned Imam Hassan. And his son, Muhammad bin Ash'as, was the one of the officers of Yazidi forces in Karbala. So the whole family is the family of Nifaq in a way. And he came one day to the house of Ali. Apparently it was nighttime, with a flask of honey, a container of honey. Honey is sweet. But when Amir al-Mu'mineen looked at it, to Ali, it was not sweet, it was poison. Not because poison had been put in it. This person had actually come to bribe Ali. There was an issue he wanted to be done, and Ali had not yet given the response positively. And so Amir al-Mu'mineen asked him, what is this? Asilatun, am zakatun, am sadaqa? Why did you bring this for me, this honey? Is this a reward of something that I have done? I have not done anything for you. Or is this part of zakat or sadaqa? And if it is that, فَذَلِكَ مُحَرَّمٌ عَلَيْنَا أَهْلُ الْبَيْتِ. If it is zakat and sadaqah, then it's haram for us on Ahlul Bayt. We can't use it. He says, no, 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 it's not this, not that. This is hadiyah. And Amir al-Mu'mineen knew this is not a hadiyah. He's trying to bribe Amir al-Mu'mineen. And that is where Amir al-Mu'mineen says something which is really worth pondering on those words. Where he says, وَاللَّهِ لَوْ أُعْطِيتُ الْأَقَامْ لِيمَ السَّبْعَى بِمَا تَحْتَ أَفْلَاكِهَا ألا أن أعص الله في نملة أسلبها جلب شعيرة ما فعلت. He says, by Allah, if I am given the kingdom of the seven heavens and whatever is beneath it, with one condition, that I should disobey the command of Allah regarding a small ant and pull away the grain of barley from its mouth, by Allah, I will never do it. Just think about it. Somebody is given the choice. You become the master of the seven heavens and whatever is underneath it. And you have to all do one thing. There is one ant which is a, you know, a grain of barley in its mouth. Just pull it out. What do you think about it? Look at the equation there. Al-aqalim as-sab'a, seven heavens and whatever is beneath it. And one, you know, grain of barley. And this is where Amir al-Mu'mineen is showing that, you know, we have to remember, the goal does not justify the means. Many times we get confused there. Maybe there was a very shrewd politician, he will say, okay, I'll pull out that grain of barley, and once I become the king of the kingdoms, of the heavens and the earth, I'll give 10 barley to this same ant. But Amir al-Mu'mineen is saying, I don't want my government to be based on committing a sin, an injustice, even to a creature like a small ant.
Kull صبحا وكل اشراب ايام تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاق قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib this means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
In the limelight.
The FBI has found more classified documents at the Wilmington, Delaware home of President Joe Biden. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Associated Press has covered this story and tells us more. The FBI searched President Joe Biden's home in Wilmington, Delaware on Friday, 20th of January, and located six additional documents containing classification markings and also took possession of some of his notes, the president's lawyer said on Saturday. Bob Bauer, the president's personal lawyer, said the search of the entire premises lasted nearly 13 hours. The documents with classification markings spanned Joe Biden's time in the Senate and in the vice presidency, while the notes dated to his time as vice president. The search followed more than a week after Biden's attorneys found six other classified documents in the president's home library from his time as vice president, and nearly 3 months after lawyers found a small number of classified records at his former offices at the Penn Biden Center in Washington. On Thursday, 19th of January, President Biden maintained that there's no there on the document discoveries, which have become a political headache for the president and complicated the Justice Department's probe into former President Donald Trump's retention of classified documents and official records after he left office. We found a handful of documents were filed in the wrong place, Biden told reporters who questioned him during a tour of the damage from storms in California. We immediately turned them over to the archives and the Justice Department. Biden said he was fully cooperating and looking forward to getting this resolved quickly. The president and First Lady Jill Biden were not at home when it was searched. They were spending the weekend at their home in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. President's personal lawyer, Bob Bauer, said the FBI requested that the White House not comment on the search before it was conducted, and that Biden's personal and White House attorneys were present. The FBI, he added, had full access to the president's home, including personally handwritten notes, files, papers, binders, memorabilia, to-do lists, schedules, and reminders going back decades. The Justice Department, he added, took possession of materials it deemed within the scope of its inquiry, including six items consisting of documents with classification markings and surrounding materials, some of which were from the president's service in the Senate and some of which were from his tenure as vice president. Attorney General Merrick Garland has appointed former Maryland U.S. Attorney Robert Herr as a special counsel to investigate any potential wrongdoing surrounding the Biden documents. Since the beginning, the president has been committed to handling this responsibly because he takes this seriously, White House lawyer Richard Sober said on Saturday. Sober added, the president's lawyers and White House counsel's office will continue to cooperate with the Department of Justice and the special counsel to help ensure this process is conducted swiftly and efficiently. The Biden document discoveries and the investigation into Donald Trump, which is in the hands of the special counsel Jack Smith, are significantly different. The Justice Department says Donald Trump took hundreds of records marked classified with him upon leaving the White House in early 2021 and resisted months of requests to return them to the government. President Biden has made a point of cooperating with the Department of Justice probe at every turn, though questions about his transparency with the public remain. The website of CNBC has also covered this story and tells us more. The FBI found more classified documents at the Wilmington, Delaware home of President Joe Biden during a consensual search on Friday, 20th of January, that lasted nearly 13 hours, his personal lawyer and a prosecutor said on Saturday evening. The discovery was the fourth time since November that classified records or material has been found at a private address of Joe Biden's. His personal lawyer, Bob Bauer, in a statement said the Department of Justice seized six items consisting of documents with classification markings and surrounding material. Joseph Fitzpatrick, Assistant U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois, told NBC News, I can confirm that the FBI on Friday executed a planned consensual search of the president's residence in Wilmington, Delaware. Some of the items dated from Joe Biden's tenure in the Senate, where he represented Delaware from 1973 through to 2009, Bob Bauer said, and some of the items were from his tenure as vice president in the Obama administration from 2009 through to 2017. In addition to those records, FBI agents who did not have a warrant for the search also seized some notes that Biden wrote by hand as vice president, according to a lawyer and the White House. Neither Joe Biden nor First Lady Jill Biden were present during the search, according to Richard Sober, special counsel to the president. The items join an undisclosed number of classified government records previously discovered by lawyers for the president. A small number of classified records first were found by Biden's lawyers on 2nd of November at a private office that he kept at a Washington, D.C. think tank after ending his tenure as vice president in the Obama administration in 2017. The White House only disclosed that discovery on 9th of January. On 20th of December, a small number of classified records were found in the garage of Joe Biden's Wilmington home. A single page of classified material was then found at the Wilmington residence on 11th of January. Then the next day, five more pages of classified records were found in a room adjacent to Joe Biden's garage. When the Department of Justice officials traveled there to take possession of the single page found the previous day. The White House has said that when the president's lawyers found the previous documents, they immediately notified the National Archives and Records Administration and the Department of Justice. Friday's search was the first time revealed publicly that federal law enforcement authorities have conducted a search for government documents at Joe Biden's private addresses. Attorney General Merrick Garland earlier this month appointed a special counsel to investigate Joe Biden's retention of government records after he was vice president. Former President Donald Trump is under criminal investigation by another special counsel for taking hundreds of classified records and other government documents from the White House when he left office. Donald Trump is also being eyed for possible obstruction of justice by stonewalling efforts by government officials to recover those documents. The FBI in early August raided Donald Trump's home at his Mar-a-Lago club in Palm Beach, Florida, where they found thousands of pages of government records. The FBI had a search warrant in that case. By law, presidents and vice presidents must return government documents to the National Archives when they leave office. Joe Biden and the White House have been criticized for the two-month lag in disclosing the discovery of the first batch of classified documents at the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement in Washington, D.C.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray five times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to talk about some of the Islamic rules or laws concerning the different types of water according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwas. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hausa studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtadha Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Tawbit, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the questions regarding the different types of water according to the Islamic laws and their pertinent rules. Well, Sheikh Tawbit, let me begin our episode with this question. This might be interesting because normally this is something you can find quite common, you know, because we travel a lot these days, you know, and sometimes we use trains and sometimes we get on to, let's say, airplanes. And there are toilets or restrooms, basically.
Yes.
And you need to use them, especially for long distances. Do we have to, my question is, do we have to consider the water that we use in the toilets as core or not? Do we have to search about it? Because obviously we know there are tanks.
Yes.
Water tanks used in the trains or in the planes, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, the question is, do we have to consider it core water or running water or whatever?
Well, there's no doubt that it's not running water.
Yes.
Because you are on board an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to whether it is core or little water, it's usually the case that it is a container large enough to contain, for example, a substantial amount of water, which is even more than cool water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's better to, and it's safe to assume that it is cool water. And also, if one knows from a previous condition, from a previous situation, that it was, for example, cool, you know, then it will be permissible to apply the rules of cool water to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as long as you are using the water in the for example, on board an airplane or, let's see, or on train while you are traveling, it doesn't make any difference as to whether the water is little or cool when mm-hmm. washing yourself or washing your clothes, because little water is as purifying as cool water, and there's no difference between cool and little water
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the purification of something with the water.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there are some other issues related to cool water. We know that if cool water comes in contact with impure things,
mm-hmm.
it does not become impure, you know. But a little water becomes impure
yes.
when it comes in contact with something like urine. So His Eminence says that if water, which is, you know, if it is established that the water was cool
mm-hmm.
in the previous situation,
right,
it will be permissible to apply the rules of cool water to it.
Mm-hmm, I see. Another quick question. Let me ask you this, Sheikh Shawit. You know, if the water which is more than core or the amount of core, you know, changes, though, in
yes.
terms of, for example, taste, color, or whatever, right? After it comes into contact with or it touches something which is impure, ritually speaking, does it still purify things? Can we consider it as a purifying agent?
Well, water which is more than core, of course, you know, it can be, we can give the example of a small lake or a small pond.
Mm-hmm.
Or a big pond,
yes,
and maybe the water of ocean and anything, they are all considered to be more than core, of course. You know, if an essential najasat or impurity like blood, you know, reaches water which is more than core and changes the smell, color, or taste of it, or a part of it, and if the unchanged part is less than a core, the entire water becomes najis. The entire water becomes impure. But if the unchanged part is one, you know, one core or more, if the unchanged part can be considered as core, as equal to core,
mm-hmm.
or even more than that, then of course that part which has changed will be najis. And the one, the part which is the size of the water is equal to the size of core, does not get changed
mm-hmm.
and does not get it does not become impure.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break and we'll be back. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Shawit, our guest speaker. We are still talking about different types of water, and their Islamic laws according to Ayatollah Khomeini's fatwas. Sheikh Shawit, you know, you told us about the core water as one of those five types of water. If any amount of water which is equal to core, all right?
Yes.
We know that, for example, in the winter, it may freeze.
Yes.
All right. So a part of it freezes, though not all of it.
Yeah.
All right. It may be so that a part of it melts.
Yes.
Because of the heat, for example, around noon. And that part comes into contact with something ritually impure, najis.
Yes.
Does it become impure? I mean, like that.
The melted portion.
The melted portion, exactly.
You're right. Well, if a part of cool water freezes to ice, leaving a quantity which is not equal to cool, and then that part of the water which melts, and it's not cool, of course,
mm-hmm.
Comes in contact with najasa, then, of course, there's no doubt that it becomes najis, because the frozen part is the water along with the frozen water constitute kur. Now this small portion which melts and it comes with impurity, that water is qalil. It is little water, and
loses its contact with the remainder of the kur water, right?
Yeah. So, of course, it's considered to be qalil water, and of course, it will be najis, even if its taste or color does not change.
Mm-hmm. Sheikh Javid, what's the difference between running water and cold water, as far as purification is concerned, of course?
Well, there is no difference between the two in this regard. Mm-hmm. Both of them, purify things. Both of them are considered purifiers or purifying agents. And they are equally purifying agents in every sense.
Yes.
But the thing is that if cool water comes in contact with urine or with blood or something which is essentially impure, and that and it changes in color, or it changes in taste or in smell, then cool water becomes impure. But running water, running water, because it constantly oozes out from the earth, or gushes forth from the earth, like from a spring,
mm-hmm.
and it is flowing incessantly, then that portion or that part of the water whose color changes or whose smell changes or taste changes becomes najis. And the entire water does not become impure, because it's constantly flowing, and the old water is replaced with new water. So that old water which is contaminated with urine,
mm-hmm.
is najis, but the water which adds up and flows into the stream is considered to be pure, and it is a purifying.
Mm-hmm. I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid, for your nice comments and answers here in the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. We try to talk about some of the questions regarding different types of water and the rules or the Islamic laws about them according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwas. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم ملجا لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو رحيم محيي المميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو
This is the Heart of Life pounding IRIB English Radio.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
امیر المؤمنین بزرگترین متواضع عالم هستی است چرا؟
امام علی علیه السلام was the most humble person before Allah after Prophet Muhammad. It is narrated that he used to pray hundreds of rak'ah of salat during the night. His prayers were rooted in his humbleness before Allah. That was because he knew who is the absolute source of power and knowledge in the universe.
گاهی وقتا می اومدن به فاطمه زهرا می گفتن بیبی جان.
Sometimes people ran to Lady Fatima and informed her that your husband Ali fainted in the garden he was working. Lady Fatima stated, "He is not fading. He is worshipping Allah and he is drowned in his humbleness before Allah." Also, Imam Ali alayhi salam used to tell Hammam, one of his companions, that the best attribute of the God-very people is their humbleness before Allah and his creatures. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
in the limelight.
Since the start of the Christian New Year 2023, the Zionist regime forces and settlers have killed and injured dozens of Palestinians. This issue was rarely covered by Western media. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Israeli regime occupation forces attacked Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank and killed two Palestinians in the early hours of Thursday, January 19th. The Israeli regime military shot and killed Adham Mohammad Jabarin, a 28-year-old member of Saraya al-Quds, the military wing of Islamic Jihad. He was injured on the doorstep of Jawad Babagne's house. Jawad and his son Farid rushed to aid Jabarin when Israeli regime forces opened fire, fatally injuring the 57-year-old father. Ambulances were barred from entering the refugee camp until the Zionist regime forces retreated, Farid told media. Farid described the killing of his father as an official execution to local media. He added, "The sniper who was shooting with hatred. His bullet was hateful. It wasn't one shot, two shots, or three shots. It was over eight shots." Farid said, "My father wanted to save the young man because he cried out for help." A medic who arrived at the scene corroborated Farid's version of events. The medic said that it was clear that Jawad came to help the wounded person and was wounded himself, the Tel Aviv newspaper Haaretz reported. Jawad Babagne and Adham Jabarin were both transferred to hospital and declared dead there. The Palestinian Authority's health ministry said Israeli regime forces shot directly at a Jenin public hospital during the raid. The World Health Organization expressed deep concern about the damage to Jenin Hospital, emphasizing that healthcare should be respected and protected at all times. WHO's statement failed to mention the only aggressor, Israeli regime occupation forces. Jawad was a schoolteacher. Local media circulated his picture following his killing. Meanwhile, the Zionist regime forces shot and killed a man at a military checkpoint in Halhal near Al-Khalil. Hamdi Abu Daesh was killed while trying to carry out a shooting attack, Haaretz reported. Formerly imprisoned by the Zionist regime, Abu Daesh worked for the Palestinian Authority security forces in Beit Lahm. He was 40 years old. Witnesses stated that Israeli regime military prevented the arrival of a medical team to treat and evacuate the man. According to reports, the Israeli regime military is examining whether Abu Daev was responsible for an attack on an Israeli regime bus recently. Meanwhile, Wafa News Agency said a Palestinian identified as Tariq Ode Ma'ali, 42, was shot and killed on Saturday morning, January 21st, by Israeli regime occupation forces near the town of Kofr Nimeh, west of Ramallah, as confirmed by the Ministry of Health. It said that it was informed by the Civil Affairs Authority, which liaisons with the Zionist regime, of the death of the Palestinian man whose body was taken by the army. Report said Ma'ali attempted to attack Israelis when he was shot dead. With the killing of Ma'ali, a total of 18 Palestinians have been killed by the Zionist regime forces since the start of the year, four of them children. Also, at least six Palestinian civilians were reported injured on Friday, January 20th, and 15 vehicles were partly damaged during an attack by Israeli settlers on the village of Jorish, to the east of Nablus, in the occupied West Bank, according to local sources. Ra'ed Abu Jamus, the mayor of the village, told Wafa News Agency that confrontations erupted following a provocative incursion by army-backed Zionist settlers into an outpost, which they set up on the outlets of the village. He said two Palestinians were injured by a rubber bullet fired by Israeli regime occupation forces, whereas another four young men were beaten up and injured by the attacking settlers. In the meantime, about 15 vehicles were attacked and partially vandalized by the Zionist attackers in the village. According to recent reports, last week, scores of Zionist settlers placed caravans on a Palestinian-owned land near the village in a prelude to establish a new settlement outpost. Settler violence against Palestinians and their property is routine in the West Bank and is rarely prosecuted by the Zionist regime authorities. There are over 650,000 Israeli settlers living in colonial settlements in the West Bank and East Al-Quds in violation of international law.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. IRIB English Radio. Youth Station's always here.
Yes. Wa alaikum assalam, sister. I'm here as well.
Thank you for being here.
I am Asma.
And I am Beta, as always. We're at your service.
Once again, the doors of our home is open and we have another chance to discuss some beautiful, lovely things together
today.
Here.
I'm going to give you a story about myself. You know, once I travel abroad, you know, and I felt somehow I'm really alone among these strangers, these strange people around
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that
this
happens.
This different culture, this different even, I don't know, weather, climate,
yeah.
Place, region, and so on. And it felt like I'm insecure. I don't know, have you ever experienced the same thing as me or not?
So one of the things that makes us feel insecure or then we're out of that safe zone that we have for ourselves
exactly.
Is meeting new people.
Yeah.
And going to new places and the strangers all around. So this is going to be making you feel like insecure.
And I think when you, I don't know, sign up in, I don't know, a kind of virtual world, you feel the same insecurity because you don't know anyone.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. Yes.
And this
because the
world,
reality is not revealed totally.
And even the virtual things are not revealed, you know,
yeah,
you know nothing
yeah.
Exactly. And this feeling of insecurity, I think, is somehow spread around the
Beta,
you know,
let's do it this way.
Yeah.
Let's at first define security and that feeling that we have when we are safe. How can you describe that?
And, you know, it's a bit difficult to describe it in, I don't know, out of metaphor
words,
or something,
yeah.
You know. The feeling of being secure somewhere is like feeling when you have and you go to your own bed at your own room.
Yeah.
You know, the same old feeling which you've experienced it. It's not the first time that you are in that situation, so
yeah.
You feel secure.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the first time I came here at this studio, I was really scared. You know, I was out of word. I couldn't speak. And I was,
you
know,
were stressed
I was
out.
Really,
yeah.
I was stressed
out. I had that
out.
Feeling as well.
And this kind of insecurity, I think, comes from being new.
Yeah, the things that you do not know.
Exactly. So this lack of being, I don't know, familiar with something will
with
lead
situation.
To insecurity, I think.
Yeah, that's very true. I would agree on that. When you do not know something, when you go into darkness,
yeah.
You again feel insecure because you do not know what's going to happen next.
From another perspective that we can see this matter, when you're in darkness, despite the fact that you don't know anything, you will imagine something.
Yeah.
You will make, I don't know, some
and
really
if you are a
thing.
Dark person, then you're going to imagine dark things.
Exactly. And you will feel insecure more than other people.
Exactly, yeah.
So, to some extent, I think this feeling of insecurity depends on your personality, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people feel secure and some
people
don't.
Some people
don't.
Are born brave. They don't feel insecure.
Exactly. But
well, I'm just giving you one of the points of why
yeah.
Some people don't feel it. And, you know, because sometimes, for some extent, when it goes to some extremes, then
mm-hmm.
You might even need to visit a doctor. Because insecurities are not always the things that you can solve them by yourself.
You mean phobias or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, that's very true. Because, you know, it's all about the dangers that do not exist, but you think they exist.
They exist.
And sometimes they exist even.
But they're not dangers.
Yeah, they're not
yeah,
dangers.
You're misunderstanding
yeah, so
them.
Even in some conditions, we have to go and meet
and
doctors. Even.
I do agree with that. But I haven't experienced this kind of insecurity
yeah,
in my whole
yeah.
life. I don't have phobias, I think. I don't.
But I have.
What is your phobia?
A lot of things. So we were talking of, out of insecurity, we were talking about insecurity in Youth Station, and then suddenly we remembered phobias.
Yeah.
And we got to such an extreme that we got to phobias. I have phobias.
Tell me the most important phobia that you think will affect your life.
I guess the pronunciation, I'm not sure about the pronunciation, but it was about aerophobia. It was the phobia of cats.
Oh my gosh. Do you?
Yeah.
I love cats.
Yes, as long as they are far away, I love them too. Yeah, but once they're close,
what
the
a
world
nice way
is
to
finished.
Bother you.
What?
What a nice way to bother you. I will use that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for using my honesty against me.
This is insecurity.
Yeah, I understand the feeling of insecurity.
You're welcome.
And tell me something joking aside and all of that aside. Sometimes you feel insecure in society, and sometimes you even feel insecure in your home. Sometimes you feel insecure when you are with your friends out of school or out of school.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about personality, and we don't want to get into it.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the factors that might cause into insecurities in families or in societies. You know, as for me...
Yeah.
Myself, I would say that sometimes when I hear people talk bad about each other or they start nagging about every single thing that is happening in today's world as
mm-hmm.
for economical issues or whatever, and they start to talk foul or they start to talk some bad words, then I really feel insecure in society.
For me, it's a bit more general. You know, whenever I see something bad, it doesn't matter what it is, like lying, backbiting.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, stealing something or whatever. I feel, okay, even the person who is next to me may be that sort of person, may do that because we're human beings. And we can do anything. Sometimes we don't feel the borders, you know. There could be many roots for that behavior, that we don't recognize the borders in everyday relationships. Maybe lack of belief, I don't know, lack of ethical issues in your mind or something.
Yeah.
But when I see that sort of thing around me, for example, when I see a person who is backbiting about something else, I feel like, okay, maybe that person will do that to
me,
someone
yeah.
else about me.
Yeah, more specifically about me.
Exactly. And this feeling of insecurity is something that I you know, just feel it every day.
Yeah, and it is too sad, you know, Bita, what is going to be the consequence of feeling insecure? You know it?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the most important thing that will bother you is that you will run away from societies. You will run away from
people. Yeah, seclusion, yeah.
And, you know, this kind of feeling of loneliness that you will face is the main problem that this insecurity will cause.
I do agree. One of them is solitude. You will pick solitude out of
to avoid
being
that.
With crowd, yeah.
And, you know, even apart from these kind of more psychological and mental things and insecurities, we have physical insecurity too, as you know.
Oh, wow, yeah.
In society, I don't know. And even war is one of the most important, I don't know, insecurities that through the history that we have.
Yeah, that have hurted people for many
so
times.
Much.
Yeah, so much. And diseases also could cause...
COVID-19.
Yeah,
was
exactly.
An insecurity.
You know, insecurity. We didn't go out of home for
we
because
suffered
we did
years,
not feel safe.
Quarantine,
yeah.
I don't know, so on, which is really difficult.
And I would say depression and frustration. You know, after when your insecurities are going to be chronic, then after a specific time, you would feel like depressed.
Yeah.
For because, you know, when you think you cannot fight something, when you think that you are not sure of what is going to happen in the next step, then you would feel fed up with everything.
Yeah,
and you will feel this hopelessness and you would feel like a miserable person, you know?
I do agree with that. And let me ask you a kind of challengeable question. Do you think that women will feel this insecurity more than men or not?
No.
No,
if I say yes, are you going to judge me?
Yeah, exactly. No, no, I'm not going to go through that way of physical insecurity. I'm just telling you that
no,
because...
No, I'm not saying
because
physically.
Because human nature is somehow more delicate.
Yeah, that's because
ladies.
Of delicacy that I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
you know, and we can feel something that even maybe men cannot sometimes. And maybe some, I don't know, little tiny things will make us feel insecure. We may face this insecurity more than men.
I do agree with that. Yes, because just as you rightly mentioned, well, let's not talk about the physical insecurities because there's no doubt that they exist. And in some countries or I don't know, in some cultures even more. But let's talk about the spiritual things that we're talking, the mental thing that we're talking. Well, I would say that women are so much more attracted to details. And since we're talking about details, so inevitably we're going to be more delicate and more sensitive. And we get things even before they happen. So
and we hurt more.
Yeah. You know? And pretty much naturally, they would cause to much more of insecurities. Because you can see mothers, when they have children, they so much feel insecure. Because they're not sure about what's going to happen to their children.
And they consider all the dangers that can, I don't know, harm that
all
children.
All the possible harms that might happen to their children.
And this is really dark. And sometimes I think we go extreme on that. For example, we think of all of the dangers around us, all the possible harms that will, I don't know, harm us. And this feeling of, I don't know, being
getting
surrounded
hurt,
by all these dangers will make you feel insecure.
Yeah,
I think you have to go balance on that.
Yes, I told you. Sometimes balance and moderation, sometimes talking to yourself, shaking some sense into your own head. But sometimes it is so extreme and severe and chronic that you have to visit a doctor, I suppose. Because sometimes, you know, it goes out of your control. But right now, let's go listen to something and then we'll be back.
Okay.
This is IRI. RIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.